All right. Good morning again. I am a new face to some people as you came in, but I know some of you are familiar with me. I was trying to figure out when I was last here, and I can't believe it was a very monumental day. I am being recorded right now because I'm in pastor school, so that's going to go super well. It was the day after my 40th birthday. And I can't believe I forgot. I was going back to the summer. And I did live with my mother for a little bit at 40. So you're welcome to laugh at me. But it was because my house was being built and it was supposed to be done Memorial Day. But it was honestly one of the best times of my life, which a lot of 40-year-olds probably don't say when they have to move back in with mom, right? So I am going to be here probably every couple of weeks and or when Pastor Greg decides to call on me. With cancer, we don't know what it's going to be like. You take in a day at a time, he may feel good, and maybe he kicks me out one week, I don't know, and that would just be a blessing for me to be kicked out, because that means he's doing well and feeling good. So just please continue to keep him in your prayers. You know, he did kick cancer one time, and this is a different kind of cancer, and so it's a little scary, right, to think, you know, having to be cured twice from it. But I just hope that he can continue to feel our love. So we are going to talk. Over the past 3 weeks, we have been talking about intentional habits, right? So we talked about feeling the presence of God. We've talked about love. And we've talked about giving enthusiastically. And today is kind of a tricky one. I just want to put it on there, because it's actually birthed out of one of the most prevalent bad habits that I see in life today. And to find it, we're going to look at a story. And I bet you everybody in here has seen this story, has heard this story before. And I meet with the pastor teaching team, and we actually fought over whether we wanted to include it or not, because we didn't want to bore you today, because it's so common. I mean, little kids are going to recognize pictures of it. But it's so important to talk about this story because it helps us identify that this bad habit is actually etched into our DNA. And the story is found in Genesis chapter 3. Does anybody know what story I'm going to go with about bad habits? All right, we'll carry on. Okay, let me briefly take you through what's happened in our story today. All right, so the first part of Genesis, God created everything, right? God created everything, and it was perfect. And after he created things, he said, and it was good. It was good, right? So it's not room for improvement or first draft. I mean, God created everything perfect, even with people in it. And I know that might be hard to grasp, because people is typically what makes our life really messy, right? They're the ones that kind of make us have bad habits, and we have to develop good habits, because it was perfect, though. This was perfect even with people in it. But Adam and Eve had one command to follow, right? You ever hear you had one job and you couldn't even do it? They had one command, one very simple command: do not eat from that tree, okay? And the world was so perfect, we didn't even have to develop good habits at that time, because there was no such thing as bad habits for a while, right? So they couldn't resist temptation, right? You ever see, sometimes there's those videos of those toddlers, and they like put chocolate or candy or something, and they say, I'm going to go away, and don't eat that. Don't eat that one. And if you can't eat that one for the 10 seconds I'm gone, I'm going to give you another one. And what happens most of the time? They eat it, right? Because they can't resist sitting right there. So when you tell somebody they can't do something, right, they tend to say, oh, well, how come? Why not? It must be really, really good. And honestly, don't ever question how hard it is to develop good, healthy eating habits, because Adam and Eve essentially had an all-you-can-eat buffet, and they still couldn't even do it, right? So just think about that. But the first sin is so obvious. Adam and Eve were told not to eat of the tree of good and evil, and they did, and thus death entered the land, and they hid. And this is going to bring me to what I like to call the second sin in human history. And here's what happened. Then the man and his wife heard the sound of the Lord God as he was walking in the garden in a cool day, and they hid from the Lord God among the trees of the garden. But the Lord God called to the man, "Where are you?" Genesis 3, 8 through 9. I love that. God was walking in the garden. He was among them. God knew what they did, right? But he wanted them to admit it to themselves. But then they opened their mouth and did what we like to call the second sin of human history, and that's the sin of excuses, right? They had excuses way from the beginning. God asked Adam, "Have you really eaten from the tree?" And Adam said, "The woman, that woman right there that you put with me that I didn't ask for, that woman, she gave me some fruit from the tree and I ate it." Genesis 3:12. Then, of course, God looks at Eve and says, "What did you do?" So what does the woman say? "The serpent deceived me and I ate," right? So it's, well, that woman, that serpent, and neither took responsibility. In other words, they started the bad habit of lying to themselves and making excuses for the decisions. And now you may be wondering, that was a long time ago. What does it really have anything to do with my bad habits today? And I want to tell you the story and the reason why the pastor and the teaching team decided to come up with the story, because we want you to understand that lying to ourselves and making excuses is so ingrained in our DNA. It's basically way back from the end of time, right? It's so a part of who we are. And this is going to help us understand our fourth intentional habit of the series, which is be honest with yourself. And let me tell you, this does not come naturally. As we talked about, Adam and Eve started this way from the beginning. We have mastered the art of lying to ourselves, of blaming other people, of pointing fingers, of telling ourselves stories about why we really do the things. And I want to tell you a couple of hypothetical conversations that we had been talking about of, let's say, what can we come up with that we've seen, right? So here's a guy, he's like, "Hey man, can I ask you something? I see that you recently got married." "Yeah, congratulations, you recently got married. But I see that you're golfing the same amount of time as when you were single." "Oh yeah, you know, because I need my exercise, and being on the golf course really, really helps with exercise." "Oh, really? Because you're driving a golf cart. So why are you driving the golf cart?" "Well, I mean, I just need my fresh air. Fresh air is good for me, right? Get out and everything like that." "Oh, but then why are you smoking cigars when you're in the golf car, right? Just admit to yourself you like golfing, right?" And Pastor Ken was hilarious when we were talking at 84th Street. I haven't had the blessing of being able to do any premarital counseling or anything like that at this time, but he's had like thousands of times to be able to meet with a couple. And he's so funny when he tells these stories, because he says, it just cracks him up, because he knows exactly the script of where it's going to go. So you've got the engaged couple in the office, and he gets to know them. He makes them feel super comfortable, and they're feeling really good. And then he says, "Can I ask why you're living together before marriage?" And he always does this when they're feeling really comfortable. And I bet you can guess their answer. "Oh, well, because our leases were done, and we didn't want to get another lease, and it's going to save us money, because we're going to move in 3 months anyway," and they're supposed to, you know, and they come up with different things. And then he likes to do an awkward pause, okay? And I learned this from an old sheriff friend of mine. If you want somebody to tell the truth, ask a question, and then just pause and look at them. And it's going to be like the longest silence ever, but then they're going to start digging themselves in a hole, and they're going to keep going. So if Pastor Ken, if you meet him and he ever does that to you, it's because he thinks you're lying to yourself, right? So just an FYI with that. And then they eventually tell him, "Well, we really can't, you know, talk about this because we're in like the pastor's sacred office, right? So we can't really talk about why we're leaving." Or another one, like, "Hey, dude, nice truck. I love your new truck. Why'd you get it?" "Oh, yeah, you know, living out here in the back country of Michigan, it's keeping me safe." "Oh, why is your 17-year-old driving a clunker then?" "Well, she can't drive my truck. It's too expensive," right? So you're going to keep yourself safe, but you're going to let your daughter drive a clunker? Just admit it. You've been waiting your whole entire life for this truck, and you can finally afford it, right? So don't just try to make yourself feel good. And I could go on all day. problem is we justify our actions. And as long as we are honest with our, as long as we keep on developing this bad habit of lying to ourselves and making excuses, then there really is no need for God, right? Because we've done nothing wrong, because we can justify our actions. So let's get specific about what I am asking for you today. In other words, how can we start helping to develop that good habit of being honest with ourselves? So I've started asking myself a question. Why did I do that? Why did I do that really? Why did I really do it? Why did you do that? You can ask yourselves a whole bunch of things, but really, really deep down, why do you work so many hours? Really? Is it because your home life is chaos? It's stressful? You find value? It makes you feel powerful working? Why did you start flirting with that person that's not in your marriage? Is it an adrenaline rush? Or is it because you feel lonely? Why do you laugh at inappropriate jokes? Really? Does it make you feel better to put people down? Do you do it to fit in? And why did you take that drink? Really? You know what? Even if you aren't going to change, even if you're going to continue doing those things, say it's because I want to. Start being honest with yourself, because then congratulations. It's you being honest. And when you're honest, you're making progress. And that's okay. And there's something freeing to admit, I'm doing it because I want to. But you know what? It's amazing when you hear those words for the first time. I'm doing this because I want to. And when they're out of you, when you finally start telling yourself the truth of why you're doing them, you may say, actually, it's not even what I really want to do. It's not even actually that satisfying. And so it reminds me of another story, and this time we're going to go to the New Testament, another common story you've probably heard, and that's the story of the prodigal son. I'm sure many of you heard about it. And so this is actually a parable. And Jesus started telling parables or stories, right? So a parable is a story. It did not necessarily really happen in real life. This is not a story about Bob, okay? We didn't even name the person in it. But they have a habit, these parables, of being able to really pierce your soul because you can see yourself in these stories. And that's why Jesus told them. So this one is in Luke 15, and it's about a man and his two sons. And here's how the parable begins. There was a man who had two sons. The younger one said to his father, "Father, give me my share of the estate." So the father, he went and divided his property between them. Think about that. You know, your oldest, youngest, middle, anybody, son, daughter comes to you and says, "I'd like my inheritance now, so I can enjoy it," right? While you're still alive. And maybe it's like, because don't you want to see me enjoy it? Don't you want to see me happy? Just give it to me now. You're not going to use it. You've already planned. Everything's good, right? So that kid probably has some nerve to be able to go to his dad and say, "Give me my inheritance." The guy's vision for his life was honestly sex, drugs, and rock and roll. He wanted a party. And on one level, you got to respect that because he was honest, right, with himself about what he wanted to do with it. But it begs the question, was it good for him? And maybe you can relate. Maybe there's something that is deep down in your life that you know is unhealthy, but you're doing it. It can make you feel good. It could be something that gives you a sense of freedom. But honestly, if you look at it, where is it leading you? Is it risking relationships? Is it destructive to your physical health? Could it make a barrier between you and God? So Jesus continued. Not long after that, the younger son got together all he had, set off for a distant country, and there squandered his wealth in wild living. And after he had spent everything, his entire inheritance, there was a severe famine in the whole country, and he began to be in need. So he went and hired himself out to a citizen of that country who sent him to fields to feed a pig. He longed to fill his stomach with the pods that the pigs were eating, but no one gave him anything. Luke 15, 13 through 16. You know, he hit rock bottom. And if you study this story, he was a Jewish boy. They did not associate with pigs, right? But he was starting to have fantasies of eating the food that the pigs ate. Even going down, he really hit rock bottom at this part. You know, and maybe that's where we tend to find ourselves. Maybe we didn't course correct fast enough and the flirting ended up hurting our marriage. Or maybe you didn't face your addiction and it derailed relationships. Or maybe your gossip that you've been gossiping has ruined that close relationship with you and trust that you had with a friend. And now you feel lonely. And that's why I think lying to ourselves can utterly be so dangerous. You may say, I'll get this under control next year when things are better. I can totally do this. I've got a handle of this. It's not harming anyone else. But herein lies the problem. When we lie to ourselves, when we're not honest and we don't admit, if you keep lying, you will not hear the voice of God. Lying to yourself, making excuses, and not being honest does not allow God's voice to come in and truly be able to talk to you. And he's not going to force us to admit. The parable of the prodigal son, the father did not go and say, what are you going to do with all this money and admit everything you did? And I'm sure he was probably like a good father who tried to talk some sense into his son, right? And said, well, have you thought about? But the son didn't want to hear it. And there's a key phrase that if you study the scripture and how it was originally written, that we don't want you to miss. And that's when he came to his senses. When the son came to his senses, he said, how many of my father's hired servants have food to spare, and here I am starving to death? He came to his senses. There's a lot of translations that talk about when God was there with him and helped him come to his senses, right? So he wasn't alone. God never leaves us. God is always there with us. He found himself living in squalor among pigs. That was the lowest of low. That made you so unclean if you were a Jewish boy. But he found himself in a situation because of his mistakes that put him there. But that's the grace to the story. When you hit rock bottom, when you catch yourself sinning, God is not going to write you off. God was clearly in the muck with this young son and was there with him this entire time. And he's going to welcome you with open arms. No matter, there's no amount of time that you can go and living in this way without God welcoming you with open arms. This is what happens. So he got up, he went to his father. But when he was a long way off, his father saw him and was so filled with compassion for him that he ran to his son. He threw his arms around him, he kissed him, and the son said, Father, I have sinned against heaven and against you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son. But the father said to his servants, quick, bring the best robe and put it on him. Put a ring on his finger and sandals on his feet. Bring the fattened calf and kill it, and let's have a feast to celebrate. For this son of mine was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found. So they began to celebrate. And don't you just love this image if you really pay attention to the words on it? When he returned home, he was not condemned. And fittingly, the father threw a party for his son who left to party, right? And it's incidentally the only image of God running in the Bible. Don't miss the significance of this. In the story of the garden, God was walking amongst the garden with Adam and Eve. So in other words, they were still lying to themselves and making excuses, but God was still there. He's not going to leave you. He's not going to write us off. But if we're honest with ourselves and we start admitting that, God is going to run to us and throw his arms around us and be there. Recently, I know I've talked to a few people at the beginning, I have taken a leave of absence from work. And if you were here on June 27th, the last time I was here, I was talking about, my path of becoming a pastor and how people thought I was crazy because I had this great prominent position. I climbed the corporate ladder and work was so important, right? And it was so important because I needed to make money. because my husband and my children have a bad syndrome, and we don't know how long my husband's going to leave. His dad died when he was 49 from the same syndrome. My husband's 42, and I wanted him to be able to make memories because his dad died when my husband was 13, and he says, I wish I had more memories, right? And so I was like, oh, well, that's why I'm working, and that's why we're going to retire him, and we're going to let him stay at home, and he's going to handle the kids and everything. This whole time, I was lying to myself. This entire time, I liked work because I felt value out of it. People came to me. I was the one person that could make things happen. It wasn't about the money. It's because it made me feel important and allowed me to ignore all of the health issues and to compartmentalize them. We're headed out Wednesday to go to Mayo Clinic. My husband's having surgery out at Mayo Clinic to remove some tumors. And I didn't have to think about it. I'm so busy with work and working overtime that I can put it in a box and set it aside until it's time to go to Mayo Clinic again, and then I'll worry about it. But the interesting thing that this leave of absence allowed me to do was to recognize my priorities were horrible. My daughter's in middle school. She needs me. She is struggling. Middle school is a tough time for a child. I ignored that. I didn't have time. They needed me at work. My husband needs me. My younger daughter needs me. I've developed friendships and relationships that I ignored because I thought that's what important workers do. But having this leave of absence has allowed me to really start being honest with myself and telling myself the reason why I was at work was because I felt important. It wasn't about having my husband be gone and everything. Those were the lies I was telling. So I want to ask you this. Where are you lying to yourself? Do you have an addiction? Drugs, food? Is there some unforgiveness that's in your heart? Did somebody hurt you so badly that you felt violated and you can't forgive them? Your heart is so hardened and guarded, and now you refuse to forgive. Do you have any shady business dealings that you don't see any other way? And you're saying, I've got to make sure we keep the business afloat for these people, for our employees, and you keep it separate from God. When will you admit this turmoil within you? When you will see that the Lord is for you and not against you, and you can stop making excuses for the bad things in your life? To close, I'm going to give us an opportunity to just sit in silence for a few minutes, to reflect and to be honest with ourselves and ask God to search our hearts and help to uncover some of the things that we're feeling and to pray.
Thank you. May the Lord bless you and keep you. May his face shine upon you. Go out and enjoy this beautiful day. Have a great rest of your weekend and a great week, and thanks for coming.